It joins Cecil and Celeste to talk about ways to deal with the ongoing housing crisis in Portland. 9 o'clock on the Old Mole Variety Hour, we'll look at the 27th Annual African Film Festival, a Teaching in the Time of Trump teach-in for social justice educators, and clean energy strategies. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. On Locus Focus at 10:15, Barbara Bernstein speaks with the director of finance at the Sightline Institute in Seattle about Trump's contradictory moves on energy policy. At 11 on Health Watch, questions about the obsession with eating gluten-free and dairy-free diets. A new book called Eat Wheat will be featured. And then at 11:30 on Madness Radio, they'll take a look at lasting psychological effects that refugees may face after fleeing war-torn countries. And this is all because of generous support from KBOO members. If you're not a member, please become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on donate. More talk radio is next. It's 8 o'clock.
This is Love Jones, producer of the world-famous confessional. This year, Contessa de la Luna brings you a real bona fide Wild West jamboree and variety show. We've got live performances by Contessa de la Luna and Courtney Vondrell from Three Leg Torso, plus audience lasso contests, sock puppet theater, surprise fun box drawing, many other prizes. We've got performances by the Sea Charms and a selfie booth with Contessa de la Luna. We've got plenty of surprises and fun in store, so mark your calendars Thursday, February 9th, 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater. All proceeds benefit KBOO, your community radio station. Tickets are available now online at ContessaWestern.BrownPaperTickets.com or at the door the night of the event. Get your hat, get your spurs, and come on down Thursday, February 9th at the Clinton Street Theater starting at 7 p.m. Contessa de la Luna's Wild West Jamboree, an old-time variety show.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the 27th Annual Cascade Festival of African Films, taking place Thursdays through Sundays until March 4th at PCC Cascade in Portland. The Cascade Festival of African Films shows us Africa through the eyes of Africans, rather than a Vision of Africa package for Western viewers. The films celebrate Africa's achievements, expose its failures, and reveal possibilities for a hopeful future. The festival includes live music performances, plays and short films, documentary, and a Women's Filmmakers Week. Again, that's the 27th Annual Cascade Festival of African Films, Thursday through Sundays until March 4th, at Moriarty Arts and Humanities Building, Room 104 at Portland Community College, 705 North Killingsworth Street in Portland. More information and specific times for the screenings can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor a speech by author David Billings on Tuesday, February 14th at 7 p.m. at the St. Andrews Community Center in Portland. David Billings is a nationally known anti-racist historian, organizer, and United Methodist minister, and will speak about his new book, Deep Denial: The Persistence of White Supremacy in U.S. History and Life. Again, that's author David Billings on Tuesday, February 14th at 7 p.m. at the St. Andrews Community Center, 806 Northeast Alberta Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning. Today is February 6, 2017, and you are listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO, 90.7 in Portland, 91.9 in Hood River, 104.3 in Corvallis, Albany, and via the World Wide Web, it is kboo.fm. My name is Cecil Prescott, and I greet you on this Monday, and I woke up, and there was no snow. So it's easy to travel, just the usual rain here in beautiful Portland. This morning, we will have a conversation about housing in Portland, the trouble of finding affordable housing, and what communities, groups, and individuals are doing to rectify this situation. Joining us a little later on this program will be Margot Black with Portland Tennis United, who will talk about a multiple of issues, but also focusing on the recent Portland City Council resolution that will change for the better the challenges that renters face in this city, a relocation cost that will be paid by landlords for no-cause evictions. So I'm certain that many of you have landlord stories about renting and about finding affordable housing. And just to document some of those, I want to encourage you to call us, share your stories. Have you been evicted or been a victim of no-cause eviction? What did you do? Where did you find help? Or did you find help? And certainly we will continue to talk about those issues and what are the rights and obligations of all of us, and particularly what are the challenges that renters face. So let me give you our phone number so that you may share your story with us. You may call us here at 503-231-8187. And share your stories about the challenges you face either finding affordable housing or when you find affordable housing, being forced to move by a rent height or a no-cause eviction. Certainly, this has been a topic of concern of many of us for many months. In recent months, through the action of individuals and organizations, the Portland City Council have made some tentative moves to address these issues. In October, Commissioner Salzman authored a resolution that will expand the days and time needed to give to let renters know about rent increase. And so it used to be 30 days, but in October, a resolution was passed so that for rent increases of 5% or more, or no-cause evictions, the landlord must give the tenant 90 days notice. So that expanded it from 30 days to 90 days. And in this fall, for only, I believe, the second time in certainly recent Portland City history, a sitting commissioner was evicted from his seat, we might say, when he was challenged by a tenant, but a housing advocate, Chloe Udaly unseated Steve Novick, and much of her campaign focused on renters' rights. And then she was able to offer and pass a amended resolution to address the needs of tenants who are forced to move. When Margot joins us, we'll talk more specifically about that and what that means to all of us, whether we are tenants or landlords or home owners. One other thing that we should talk about is where do we go from here? And I'm hesitating because my co-host is talking very lively and with our engineer and making me lose my train of thought.
No, that's not my fault.
I forgot to close the door so that I could be in a soundproof booth.
And you could be in a thought-proof environment.
No, thought-encouraging environment if I close the door.
Okay.
So we certainly want to encourage your calls here. If you can talk about your stories about either finding housing, the trouble you have in keeping affordable housing, and we will certainly continue this conversation when Margot Black enters. One other point that I wanted to make was Tina Kotek.
Yes.
The head honcho. Speaker of the House certainly has some proposals for the Oregon House and state government around housing. Part of the problems we have is because there's an ongoing conversation of the viability of rent control or rent stabilization, and also the because of a state law, localities cannot enact rent control or rent stabilization. So Tina Kotek has a proposal that beginning this month, I think the House and Senate are in session this week, next week?
I believe it starts this week.
This week. And so those are some issues that will be addressed in this current session.
One of the things I'd like to also hear is we understand that people who are on the lower end of the earning spectrum are having challenges because the percentage of your take-home pay that housing takes has increased dramatically in the past few decades. I remember as a young person asking my dad, how much should I pay for housing? And he said, well, 20 to 25% of your take home was a decent amount. And that allowed you to have savings. That was one of his big things, savings. Okay. And you do hear how Americans are one of the lowest savers of industrialized nations. And so you can understand why some type of rent control measure is important if you are not earning a livable wage. But I'm really curious as to how many people earn a livable wage and still find housing encompasses more than 25, 35, even up to 40% of your housing, of your salary, and you don't live in luxury housing. And, you know, I'm not quite sure how one defines luxury housing because it's what landlords say is luxury housing is what we say is luxury housing. I figure, okay, if you have your own washer and dryer, if you have a dishwasher, if you have a garbage disposal, those really should be basic amenities that belong in the household.
Federal regulations suggest that income, you should pay about 30% of your income for housing. And that
based on what salary?
No, 30% of your salary should be based on, should be housing. I was trying to look for the most recent stats, but there's an unheard of a percentage of Portlanders who pay up to 50% or more of their income for housing.
And that's at just about any income level, and that's because the median cost for an apartment is so high. Yeah. And what interests me is that you can pay $1,000 a month, roughly. You know, we'll use that. And say your expectation is $1,000 a month and it's a one bedroom. Well, we could be talking anywhere from 300 to maybe 600 square feet for that amount of money.
$1,000 a month for one room. I'm just saying, because for many Portlanders, $1,000 is astronomical in terms of income.
Yes, it's astronomical in terms of income, but when you think about the people who were living in some of the apartments on Killingsworth that recently had the 100% increase, I believe their base rent was somewhere around $700. Yeah. Now, we don't know how many rooms that was, but I can pretty much assume from having worked in that area that we're looking at maybe two, maybe three bedrooms, but it's not... It's probably not more than 1,000 square feet. I'd be surprised if it was 1,000 square feet.
And so if you pay roughly, you know, the suggestion of one quarter of your income for rent, $1,000, you would be expected to make maybe $4,000 a month, which is, you know.
Okay, are we talking about $4,000 gross or net?
Well, you know.
Okay,
so
that's what
unless you pay,
about.
You know, $50,000 a year for $1,000 a month, that's what
right
should give you adequate, not the size of the apartment, but adequate to buy food and pay for
well
cars
now
and
here's the thing about
like
apartments depending on whether you live in a subsidized apartment or not, and it may be even if you do, you have to have renter's insurance. A lot of places won't allow you to rent without renter's insurance.
So
and then there's utilities.
Yeah,
and then do you live in a place where you pay your water, sewer, and trash, or your landlord does? And then additionally, one of the concerns, you know, because
some
talking
of us
about
like to
the,
eat as well.
Thank you. there is that. So we want to get, you know, a little idea of what's going on out there within the different range and also age groups. 503-231-8187.
Good morning, April.
Hi, Cecil. I decided to call in. I'm living in a two-bedroom house, which I really only need one bedroom, but I had it for when I was raising my kids, and I'm paying $1,050 a month, and I have, at this point, exactly $150 left over after I pay my rent.
That's frightening.
Yeah. So I have been living here for 21 years, and even during the best time, because my income has been better at times, I have always paid at least 50% of my income.
Whoa.
Yeah, I have never paid 30% of my income for rent.
And that's in the entire 21 years you've been living there?
Yeah, uh-huh.
Now, is it because of location or size of your apartment or amenities? Because 21 years worth of paying 50% of your income is unthinkable.
Yeah, well, and it's before that. I mean, I have never, as long as I've lived in Portland, never paid 30% of my income or less, ever.
And do you live you said you live in a home, so is it a one, has it been the same owner throughout the 21 years?
It's been the same owner. when I moved in, I was paying 50% of my income. And I moved in partly because most places wouldn't let you move in unless you had three times the rent.
Yes.
Yeah, and so I really had no choice. They would let me move in with half the rent, which is a good deal.
Yes.
And it was in my daughter's school district, too. Mm-hmm. I've talked to other people in the area, and I'm paying a little more, like maybe $100 more. But I live in Northeast Portland. It is not luxury housing. In fact, I would say my landlord doesn't even do basic maintenance.
Mm-hmm.
It's fairly regular. It's a fairly average rent for the location.
You said in Northeast Portland. Could you say which neighborhood?
Yeah, I'm in North Tabor.
Okay.
Which is becoming the next hot neighborhood now. But when I moved in, it was a very working class neighborhood.
Working class, but very stable, if I recall.
Yeah, neither of those things are true anymore.
Right. So, I'm still blown away by the fact that you spent so much money.
Yeah.
So what kind of amenities do you have, and any idea about what your square footage is and why it has cost so much?
It's It's fairly large. I have no idea about the square footage. I have no amenities whatsoever. It isn't even really kept in good repair. And there weren't even appliances there when I moved in.
Ouch.
So do you pay utilities in addition to that? And water and garbage, do you pay, or the landlord?
They pay the garbage, which would be the very lowest thing because I hardly use it. I pay water and sewer.
Okay. And are you? Have you ever thought about moving or look for another place?
Oh, the last couple of years, I have thought about it so much, but unless I find a place that is, you know, cheap enough, like $700 or $800. I don't think I'd have the money to even cover moving costs right now.
Certainly.
And that's the other part of the equation that people don't know about.
So, I mean, I feel sort of trapped here because, you know, while I'm paying such a huge chunk of my income, it also, I think, is lower than what I'm hearing is the average rent out there in Portland.
Yes. Yes. And it forces people to consider taking drastic measures. But we want to thank you for your call and giving us an idea of what it looks like out there, both for renters of apartments and for housing area.
Yeah. The good news is I did go to a housing forum on Sunday.
Yes.
Or Saturday. I think it was... Yeah, Saturday.
This weekend, yes.
And the legislators, we sat with our local legislators, and there were like over a dozen legislators there. And they did the report backs after we talked to them, and it sounds like they get it.
Good.
But I don't know if they can do anything fast enough to help the vast majority of us.
Certainly.
Well, stay connected and stay especially connected to your advocacy organizations.
Yes, I will.
And well, thank you for your call.
And you're listening to More Talk Radio here on KBOO. We're talking about housing in Portland. We'll be joined later this morning with Margot Black. But we are joined by you. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. Tell us your housing story. Let's
Good morning,
go to Tyler.
Tyler.
Hey, what's going on?
You tell us.
well, the housing problem is pretty crazy out here. One thing that you guys didn't mention was older people that have families that are going back to school.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Financial aid is, I spend 100%. I don't have any money left over off of anything. So when I get my financial aid, that goes straight to rent.
Wow.
And that covers me for the 3 or 4 months until I get my, my next, semester of financial aid.
So when you get your next semester financial aid, then you're back to square one, aren't you?
Yeah. I don't have any money left over. So,
well, how can you work? Are you allowed to work with your financial aid?
Yeah. I mean, I work. I have a little part-time job, but I mean, I have a family too. So, I have a wife and a kid, and I'm making it work off of a financial aid and a part-time job.
How long have you lived? You and your family live where you're living now?
About 4 years.
4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
Is it an apartment or a house?
It's a house.
And how much is your rent, if I may ask?
It's $1,195.
Mm-hmm.
And how many bedrooms? Or?
Three bedrooms.
Okay.
That's still quite a bit. And what neighborhood do you live in, Tyler?
North Portland, the Kent neighborhood.
Okay. Yeah, that was also one of the hot areas a couple of years ago. So a lot of the housing is gone, and what's left primarily now are apartments and rental housing. Rental dwellings are generally going to be housing in older apartments or some of the newer ones, which I imagine are very small and very expensive.
Oh man, it's great. I think we only have like 1,000. It's a 3-bedroom, but it's only 1,000 square feet. So,
see what I mean,
small.
Cecil? Yes. Okay. Well, thank you for your call and giving us an idea of what your situation is.
All right. Thank you.
Uh-huh. Thank you, Tyler. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. We're talking about housing, and we are going to go to our next caller.
Good morning, Alan.
Good morning. Thanks for having this conversation this morning. It's pretty good. I kind of a different spin. I own a house in Southeast Portland, and I have some renters in it. And you know, I charge $12.50 a month. three bedrooms that, you know, has one bathroom.
and about how many square feet is it, Alan?
Just 1,100 or so.
Okay, so you know, pretty small for three people.
Except there's a couple and their kid, the couple's mom, and the cousin, veteran, Iraq war guy living in the basement.
Wow.
How long
have you rented this home, and have you had any problems, or what are some of the challenges you face as a landlord?
Mm-hmm.
Repairs.
Yes.
You know, that's the hard thing. Some repairs, I just really have to work around, the folks that live there. The house needs some good rehab. And one of the things, it's like, in order to do, major rehab, it's like, I don't really want to evict them, they've been pretty nice. You know, we've been able to do quite a bit of work, around them, but it's an older house, and you've got a kid. There's, I had to give them, the lead-based paint warning, and all
yes.
that type of stuff.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
And on the other hand, it works out to something around four paying adults, so $400 each. So my other spin on the subject is roommates. back in college, struggling to make it through, pay college and work at the same time. I always had roommates, and then for, 20 years or so, I was living life, and then all of a sudden, we all have roommates again. And I'm living in a situation where I have a housemate. We're split rent on a place. Otherwise, neither one of us could afford it.
Okay, so I'm going to ask this question.
Go ahead, yeah.
You own a house, you rent it out, and you rent a place to live. Can you kind of help me understand the logic behind that for you, given the housing situation it is? Because what I hear you saying is you're trying to be a responsible landlord, do what you can for upkeep for your property, and it sounds like it might be an older property, but you yourself are a renter.
Yes. That's kind of strange, but
I don't think your situation is unusual.
Strange, but I'm just curious as to why did you opt not to live in your house?
Okay, well, being a single guy, unmarried, all that,
okay, that makes sense.
A large house, way much more than I needed for my personal needs.
Okay,
and so I thought, I know some folks out here; they need a place to live, and they. Fairly decent folks. Our part of our agreement is, they have to maintain, clean the gutters, mow the lawn and stuff like that. And they don't really do that. So, about once a month, I got to go over there. But on the other hand, that's a good connection with them. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But, basically it was just too much space for me. And I saw
that makes sense.
And I thought, I can move into a smaller place and, I don't want to sound like a martyr. I'm giving
it makes sense,
So let me ask about your living situation.
Yes.
Is it acceptable? Have you had any problems with your landlord or challenges?
Oh, not at all.
Okay.
We take care of all of the utilities. Send him a check once a month. Once a year, he comes out and checks the place out. And we just really haven't had any issues. We pay everything, garbage, water, sewer.
And what percentage of your take-home pay goes to your housing costs?
Well, because, I've got a little bit coming in. The rent I get is maybe a couple $100 more than the mortgage and taxes and insurance and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got a little bit coming in from that, retirement coming up here. But, it's about 35%. So it's not tight for me. But I realize that it's tight for my tenants and, not the best living situation.
Mm-hmm.
And,
but what can we do about that? That's the tough thing.
And that's the questions. When we're hoping folks will be able to ask Margo, but thank you for calling in and giving us another perspective.
It's tough being a landlord, and especially if you're a conscientious one, and you don't want to gouge people. I mean, I had thought about, hey, man, evict these guys and jack it up another couple hundred bucks, go in, maybe put some money into it, put in a second bathroom, or something like that, and jack the rent up. On the other hand, I'm going, these guys are working folks, and they need a place to live, and they're fairly happy where they are, and, so I can live with that.
All right.
Well, thank you.
All right, you guys. Thanks for hosting this call-in this morning. I appreciate it.
Appreciate your comments.
Yes. You're listening to Your Community Connection, KBOO Portland, 90.7 here in the metro area, 91.9 in east of the metro area along the Columbia River Gorge, along the Willamette River Valley. It's 104.3, and everywhere it is KBOO.FM.
And coming up this morning after this, Your Radio Show. At 9 is the Elmo Variety Hour, looking at the 27th Annual African Film Festival, and a Teaching in the Time of Trump teach-in for social justice educators and clean energy strategies. At 10 is Chris Andre with Ear Cascadia. At 10:15, Locus Focus host Barbara Bernstein speaks with the director of finance at the Sightline Institute in Seattle about the president's contradictory moves on energy policy. At 11 is HealthWatch Dr. John Dulliard questioned the obsession with eating gluten-free and dairy-free diet with his new book, Eat Wheat. And at 11:30 is Madness Radio, which looked at the lasting psychological effects that refugees may face after fleeing war-torn countries. And thank you, KBOO members, for your generous support. And if you'd like to be a member, go to kboo.fm and click on donate. This is More Talk Radio, and we're speaking about housing.
Housing, indeed.
Let's go.
Okay. Well, we understand we have Margo on the phone, so let's go to our guest, Margo.
Good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Hi, how are you doing?
Great, how are you?
Good, good, good.
I had an opportunity, I wasn't able to get to City Hall the other day, but I had an opportunity to listen to your testimony and wanted to know your feedback about the resolution that was passed and the changes it made and just general thoughts.
Well, I am really delighted that it passed, obviously. I think this is a fairly landmark legislation. I was disappointed that we didn't have a more thorough conversation about the exemption, where I do think that there are some edge cases for landlords who own one unit. I think that exempting all of them was not really well thought out. At TCU, most of the landlords that we hear about are the small-time landlords in terms of being some of the biggest abusers of no causes and price gouging. They're some of the best, too, but they're also some of the worst, and I think that that was not, that wasn't done carefully.
Can I jump in right there? Two things I want to ask. One is, it sounds like you might be on a cell phone and we're losing the signal. It's breaking up. Is there any way you can adjust where you are, or maybe go to a landline?
I don't think I can get to a landline, but I can adjust where I am.
Okay, perfect.
A minute.
Perfect.
I have a couple walks down the street.
Okay. And then the next thing is, I understand what the fear is for a lot of landlords who have not abused the no cause eviction, and that is when you get bad players in there. So I can see why it's really important to have a very clearly thought out plan that deals with good tenants, versus bad tenants and good landlords versus bad landlords when it comes to using a no-cause eviction. So I'm wondering, how does this ordinance plan to, or I should say the makers of this ordinance, how do they plan to address that so that we can maintain some kind of fairness and balance in the rental dynamic?
Well, we have a for-cause eviction process that is very effective and efficient,
mm-hmm.
and there's really no reason not to use that if we are dealing with problem tenants.
So just to repeat it, because her signal is breaking up, she's saying we do have the for-cause processes, which are excellent in terms of addressing problem tenants. One of the beauties of the for-cause process is that it very clearly should state what the problem is, give a certain amount of time for it to be remedied, and if it's remedied within that time and then there's no subsequent similar incidents, then the person regains their good status. However, if it's not remedied, then there are other very thorough and I'm going to assume very secure measures that landlords can take, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
So one of the arguments that you hear, I've heard repeatedly, and I think some of the testimonies the other day was, I cannot do the full cause because it's a bad tenant and no one wants to testify and it'll just create more problems and problems. Is that a reasonable argument to continue no cause evictions?
It's certainly not. I mean, in Portland, a no cause eviction is 90 days. Mm-hmm. So if we have a tenant who is so dangerous and is such a nuisance that to get them out is going to require their tenants testifying against them, and that those tenants wouldn't do that because it puts them at risk, then I don't understand why we think that same tenant is just going to quietly and pack up and go with a no-cause eviction. I mean, plenty of no-cause evictions end up in eviction court when those tenants, won't or can't leave. I think that those tenants are a very, very, very rare case, where we're at a courtroom and a neighbor is being required to testify against them and is too scared to do that. And I think that, those types of tenants, depending on the situation, I mean, a for-cause notice would be, a 30-day process, for the due process part and then the FED process. But under certain circumstances, you can give them 24 hours notice.
And yes, you can.
The idea that a landlord would give 90 days and this awful tenant would just quietly go versus, 30 days or less time just seems disingenuous to me. I mean, the fact of the matter is no-cause evictions are used to retaliate and discriminate. They're not used to get rid of tenants whose neighbors have to testify against them.
So there's two things I would like to do now. Have you explained the ordinance and then talk about how people might access that information? And then if we have a little bit more time, I wanted to talk about how people, especially landlords who have this problematic tenant, can use some of the ordinances that are in effect and the resources that are in effect, because I happen to be in a position where I know a bit about them, having taken the landlord training course that the city offers and then working with housing. But can you explain the ordinance for people so they understand that this is not an instant bailout, but it is a valuable resource?
Sure. So the ordinance says that if a tenant is displaced through a no-cause eviction or a rent increase over 10%, so they get a rent increase that's 10% or more and say, gosh, I really can't afford that, I'm going to have to move, and they let the landlord know, we'd call that an economic eviction, that those tenants are owed relocation expenses from their landlords, and that would be in the amount of $2,900 for a studio, $3,300 for a one-bedroom, $3,900 for a two-bedroom, and $4,500 for a three-bedroom or above. And I believe that the landlord has like maybe 45 days after either giving notice or hearing from their tenant that they are going to be moving from a rent increase to provide that relocation assistance. And that applies to, that applies immediately, and it applies even to notices that are in effect. And the only exceptions are if you like are renting rooms from your landlord, that does not apply, like if you share housing with your landlord, or for landlords who own only one unit, or for those who are moving back in, landlords who are moving back into their primary residence after an absence of no more than 3 years.
Okay.
And you had another question, Celeste?
So how can people access this? Because I did hear you say that since it's been enacted, it covers any no-cause eviction or a rent increase over the 10% that is in effect now. So what is the active date?
So I believe if you received your notice any 89 days or less from when it went into effect on Thursday, then it applies to you. And we are, you know, Portland Tenants United is trying to get a fact sheet together. I know that Commissioner Udaly's office is as well. Of course, there are some last-minute amendments that we need to make sure are factually covered in the fact sheet. So be looking at both our Facebook page and Commissioner Udaly's page for some information on that. B, you know, it's going to come down to writing your landlord a letter that says, hey, just so you know, this ordinance passed. Now, for notices that are in effect right now, I believe the landlord has a certain period of time to rescind those notices so that they can, you know, not be on the hook for that relocation. What I'm not entirely sure of is what happens if, you know, suppose somebody's at the very end of that notice period and they have already moved due to that rent increase or that no-cause eviction. I don't know how that works with rescinding. I think that's kind of a bump that is going to need to be ironed out as we are figuring out how to practically apply the ordinance.
Yes.
But in general, it tenants are going to have to write their landlord a letter and advise them of the situation. And then landlords, I have a little bit more of a grace period to pay for those who are currently in their notice period
mm-hmm.
before any penalties might happen. So if a landlord just flat out says, no, I'm not paying, then the penalties for that are 3 months rent, or if they don't pay on time. And so there's a bit of a grace period for that for folks who are in notice. And that's kind of the stick to make sure that they don't force their tenants to take them to small claims court in order to enforce this. Because if the landlord loses, they'll have to pay the relocation and the court costs.
And the court costs, right. So then, and we do have a caller, but I want to make sure people get this information, is that if, for example, they've signed an agreement to say they're going to move out, but they didn't want to, and they were kind of like either tricked or forced to, can they still avail themselves of this service?
The tenants?
Yes.
Who are in this position?
Mm-hmm.
I believe so if they are in the, if they're still within their notice period. So
okay.
If someone's 90-day notice expired, you know, 2 weeks ago, then unfortunately no. But if folks are in their notice period and have, say, already moved, then I presume it still applies. Where I'm not 100% clear is if they've already moved, of course, the landlord can't rescind the notice at that point because the tenant's already gone. You know, that to me seems like a little bit of a wrinkle that we'll have to make sure that we have some clarity on. But yeah, if a tenant has been given a no-cause eviction or is moving due to a rent increase that they cannot afford, then they are eligible for the relocation, providing their landlords aren't exempt from the circumstances we already talked about.
So I really applaud the work of the commissioner and your organization has done to get us to this place. But you know, there's still a lot of work to be done. What happens, for example, if a landlord say, okay, I'll raise your rent 9.9%?
Well, I think I have two feelings about that. I think if we do see just a across the board 9.9% rent increase, I think that sure helps us make a good argument down at the state for lifting the ban on rent control and putting in rent control ordinances, because in a healthy housing market,
normal rent increases are, 3 to 5%. Even Multifamily Northwest, during my testimony, I mentioned that in 2012 they said, hey, yippee, things are so great for us, we can raise the rent 6 to 8% and tenants will stay because moving is so expensive, which suggests that that's a high margin for them to raise. So I think if we see 9.9% rent increases, then we're going to, that's just going to help us sort of illustrate that rent increases are, egregious and help us push for rent control. I also, for a lot of folks, 9.9 rent increase would be welcome relief. I mean, we're seeing 20, 30, 40, 50, 100% rent increases.
Yes.
And, my last two rent increases were 15 and 12%. So I know that there are still plenty of people who are getting reasonable rent increases that are under 10%. But I think that what we're trying to address is those huge rent increases that really are pricing people out. And getting them to the point, where they at least have the financial resources to move when they can't afford those rent increases.
You're listening to KBOO. This is More Talk Radio with Celeste Carey. I am Cecil Prescott. We're speaking with Margot Black of Portland's Tenants United. And let's go to our next caller, who may have a question or comment. Good morning.
Good morning.
I do. If Margot is still there, I have
yes,
a couple
is.
Of small questions. Is there a minimum tenancy required to get this largesse from the landlord? If you've lived there 6 months and the landlord raises the rent, whatever amount, are you still eligible for this payout? And go ahead. That'd be great.
The language.
No, there's not a minimum tenancy. One of the reasons for that was because, for this to be able to go into effect right away and apply right away, we had to write an ordinance that was going to require the least, bureaucratic and administrative overhead as possible, and just be as simple and broad as possible for everyone to understand. The minimum tenancy requirement may be something that is incorporated into a more sustainable ordinance that we have an Office of Landlord Tenant Affairs to support. Also, it's actually against the law to raise the rent on a tenant in their first year of tenancy, according to the House Bill 4001 that passed during the short session. So you could give a no-cause eviction for a tenant in less than a year, but you couldn't raise their rent on them anyway. So so that wouldn't apply. You said largesse. And to me, I think you're suggesting that's an enormous amount of money to give to a tenant who's only lived there for 6 months, but it doesn't actually cost the tenant any less to move out if they've lived there 6 months or 6 years.
I agree with that. There was an earlier caller who was a local landlord and is renting an older home, and his rents don't seem exorbitant, and he talked about the complications of that situation, but he says that his rental cost throws off a couple of $100 over the cost of maintaining the building and paying the mortgage and the insurance and the taxes. So and he was coming across as a stand-up person who was trying to do the right thing and not go overboard with repairs and then make the cost prohibitive to live in the house, et cetera. But if he's clearing $250 a month and it costs $3,000 for a relocation thing, he's in the hole pretty quickly.
Is he saying that he needs to raise the rent more than 10%?
No,
he wasn't.
We did not address your ordinance.
But he also did.
Well,
he has a good arrangement. And so the only reason he would move his tenants out is if he needed to renovate the place or they were no longer able to pay the money that they're currently paying, was the impression I got. But he said he did not feel the need to raise the rent.
Right, and I'm agreeing with you, but if his actual profit on being a landlord is $250 a month, what's your ordinance.
But he wouldn't need to write this. He wouldn't need to write this check.
Right.
Right.
Okay. Thank you, Bob.
So it doesn't apply.
Right.
Okay.
I mean, that's. We heard from a lot of landlords who are like, "I'm so great. I never use no cause evictions. I rent under market. I barely raise the rent year after year. This relocation ordinance is going to kill me." And to me, I'm like, I don't understand. You're not raising the rent more than 10%, and you don't use no cause evictions. This relocation ordinance isn't going to apply to you.
Right. The people don't get to ask you for money to move.
Exactly. It's not like the tenants can just. It's not like every landlord is being asked to write a check right now, or that if a tenant puts in their own notice or can't pay the rent because they, on their own terms, can't pay the already, you know, under market rent. You know, the landlord doesn't have to pay for every tenant to move ever. They only have to pay for the tenants who they, the landlord, are choosing to displace. And I think, you know, for the landlords who are under market and who are committed to being under market, you know, these are the folks who have probably really great relationships with their tenants, because their tenants really appreciate and respect, you know, somebody who's not just trying to price gouge during our housing crisis. And I think those tenants are more likely to probably accept a higher rent increase. I know if I was paying under market and then my landlord gave me and I had a great landlord and great housing and a great community, and I had a 20% rent increase, and that maybe brought me up to market or was still under because I was already under market, I would absorb that. I would pay that 20% rent increase and stay in the home that I like, in the neighborhood that I like, with the landlord that I like. So these rent increases, a rent increase over 10% doesn't automatically trigger a relocation payment. It only triggers a relocation payment when the tenant says, I can't afford this and I have to move. And for good landlords who are treating their tenants well and maintaining their housing, I don't think that those tenants will move for a rent increase over 10% if they can afford it.
Thank you so much, and we'll go to our next caller. Margo, one thing about this is that you said that if the rent goes up 10% and then that tenant cannot move, I mean, can't stay there, that it may apply to them. But isn't there a 90-day notice that allows a landlord to raise the rent as long as they give that 90-day notice that it's going to be? Okay, so if they gave a 90-day notice and the tenant still can't find a place, does the relocation fee apply then? Because that's 3 months' notice. And I'm just curious.
If they're still in that notice period, and the tenant, so, you know, let's say the notice was given 60 days ago or whatever, and that tenant is trying to move, then, yeah, and the rent increase is 10% or above, then, yeah, it would apply.
So that,
although the landlord does have a chance to rescind that notice.
Okay, that's what I was going to say. It seems like that provides a forum of discussion, so that they can actually sit down and say, okay, look, I've been here X amount of years. I like it. You've liked me, you know, so can we work this out?
Exactly.
Okay, great. We'll go to Joe. Thank you for holding.
Yeah, the conversation has moved a lot since I got on the line. So I want to address one question actually that another caller had about minimum tenancy requirements. And I do believe that I remember the ordinance exempted weekly tenancies, like for single resident occupancy units. Margo, do you remember if that's actually
that's
the case?
Okay, so yeah,
and that's not a lot of the rentals out there. I guess the point that I got on the phone originally to make, to add a bit of my story to this, is when I was at the council meeting, which was 6 hours long, we heard a lot from so-called mom-and-pop landlords, many of whom I come to find out through a realtor did not themselves disclose that they're realtors, so they had more skin in this game than their own little private landlord business. But when I hear, you know, kind of mom and pop landlord, I have two feelings. One is that there are people who want to do the right thing, who want to like somehow have this social function of like maintaining housing, being a steward, really, not a landlord, but a steward to a property that is someone else's house. But then they are also themselves beholden to an economy that is going to make them make economic decisions that don't care about the tenant. And so you can have a good landlord, but as soon as something happens that makes the property unprofitable to them, or one thing that we heard a lot from these mom-and-pop landlords is, what about my retirement? What about my kids' college? And it's kind of like, why is are other people's homes like the that, that we shouldn't be trying to balance those two? Like that's another social need, and it should not be met through this, you know, system of exploiting people for their need for housing for the money they'll pay for it.
And in other words, you're saying they shouldn't make this a speculative. This should not be a speculative income.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yes. Okay. Right. And you were saying, Margo, when I cut you off.
Are you there? Did I get cut off?
No, I was asking you what you were saying when I interrupted you.
Hello?
Hello?
No, you're still here.
We hear you. Hello?
Can you hear us?
Hello?
Okay, yes. Joe, can you hear us?
I hear you.
Can you hear Margo?
No, I just hear static.
Okay. We may have lost her and she'll have to call back. But thank you for making that clarifying point and bringing up some more information. Is there anything else you want to share briefly before you go, Joe? Because I know you've been very involved in this effort.
I think that people need to look at this ordinance and to all regulations that we have been fighting for and will continue to fight for is not necessarily about trying to like balance interests in a neutral game. We're looking to change what housing is about. And if there are people out there who want to be landlords, they should the playing field, I hate that term. I don't actually want to use that term, but the conditions of doing that should be such that you're not in it to make money. You're in it because you maybe aren't in it to be charitable, which is what a lot of landlords will say. I'm not running a charity, I'm running a business. But you are in the ownership and control of somebody else's home, and that is a public health and well-being interest. And the way that we say that's allowed to happen has to reflect the fact that that's someone's home and not someone else's investment.
Right. Not simply an investment. Great. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. And that's one of the most important things I think we need here in the Pacific Northwest to kind of shift the paradigm, because as we follow what has happened in lower and northern California, you will find that land sales is kind of a speculative financial dynamic. People trade property in real estate like they do stocks. And so it drives the prices up really high. And as you mentioned, this is something that it involves our lives. It's different from having stock in utilities or such because of that intimate connection.
We only have a couple of minutes. And Margo, I want you to address the what's the next steps and what may we expect from the state legislature in terms of allowing rent control?
So I think the next steps, at least at the state level, as you brought up, are to really throw our support and attention and outreach toward lifting the ban on rent control. So there are a couple of different bills that are asking for the ban to be lifted. Speaker Kotek's bill actually lifts the ban and puts a moratorium on rent increases over 5% across the state for a year.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other bill establishes a just cause ordinance, so just eliminates no cause evictions and stipulates what causes can displace a tenant, and those include no fault causes like an owner move-in or sale or rehab or renovation. And there are a couple different bills with those as well, and I believe that those also, for certain, if not all, no-fault causes would provide a tenant with relocation assistance with some exemptions.
Okay.
And we would like to get your contact information or any other resource for people so they can follow up on any problems they have.
So the best way to follow and contact PTU right now is through our Facebook page, which you can access even if you don't have a Facebook account. And that's, you can just go to PDXTU, so PDXT for tenants, U for union, or U for united, .org will take you to our Facebook page. And you can message us through that page. You can also send us an email at info@PDXT.org. tu.org. Like I said, we're going to try to get some info sheets up on our page soon. I'm hoping that the Community Alliance of Tenants will have all that information at the ready if you call their renters' rights hotline. And Chloe Daly's city commissioner page should have some information. And in general, following Portland Tenants United, joining and becoming a member, or otherwise getting on our listserv, will be a great way to follow what's going on with this, with both the state legislature and then our continuous work at the city in order to push for the Tenants' Bill of Rights, and just generally the organizing that we're doing in our city. All of this relies on building tenant power and organizing tenants in their buildings and their communities, and we're going to be really turning up our efforts on that to just make sure that our lawmakers know that if they don't support us, that we don't support them.
But thank you so much, Margo. Yeah. We're out of time, but don't forget to link our podcast to your page. And we want to thank Margo Black from the Portland Tenants Union, PTU. And again, the contact information is PDXPTU, and that's at Facebook. We want to thank our engineer, John, for great carriage. Yes. And stay tuned. This has been More Talk Radio with Cecil Prescott, myself, Celeste Carey, on your Community Connection, KBOO Portland.
It's 8:59, and coming up next, it's the Old Mole Variety Hour. They will look at the 27th Annual African Film Festival, a Teaching in the Time of Trump teach-in for social justice educators and clean energy strategies. At 10 o'clock, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15 on Locus Focus, Barbara Bernstein speaks with the director of finance at the Sightline Institute in Seattle about Trump's contradictory moves on energy policy. At 11 on Health Watch, questions of the obsession with eating gluten-free and dairy-free diets, a new book called Eat Wheat. At 11:30, Madness Radio looks at the lasting psychological effects that refugees may face after fleeing war-torn countries. And all of this great programming is due to generous support of people like you who are KBOO members. If you're not one, become one, please, by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate. It's 9 o'clock. The Old Mole Variety Hour is next.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1995.